Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast, recording this on an early, and I mean early, Saturday morning. This will go up on my Blog Talk Radio channel probably later on this afternoon. I'll put it up later on this afternoon, recording it right now. A lot to talk about in the world of sports and pop culture, and specifically in the world of sports. And hip-hop, to be exact. We're going to get into some Drake and Pusha T. But, of course, we begin with the finals. And, again, Real Deal Podcast with some real Gerald Quinn. Hello to my YouTube audience out there. This podcast will stream live on YouTube and should be up anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes after the podcast is over. After it's over in its entirety, we're going to go until I just feel like I don't want to talk anymore, but hopefully that'll be for a while. As always, my there's no call number, but as always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my Instagram, follow me on the gram at Rillo Gerald Quinn, iTunes.apple.com, Real Deal Podcast. Check me out check me out on those iTunes podcasts as well. Not podcasts, but you can find me, find the podcast through iTunes as well. We're going to begin with the finals because I mentioned this a couple of days ago on Facebook, said that I had next to no interest in this finals whatsoever. Year four of Cavaliers Warriors, Golden State's a much better team. We know the narrative coming in. Kind of sick of hearing the LeBron has no help narrative. Frankly not happy with how the Houston Golden State series ended in regards to the Chris Paul injury. Houston blowing back to back double digit leads on the road and at home, of course, in Game 7 to Golden State. And again, I wanted to see something different. I wanted to get, if Houston or Boston, or if it's, a Boston Golden State, I could have dealt with that. If you had a Houston Cleveland, I could have lived with that. But I did not want to see this, Golden State in Cleveland for the fourth straight year. But lo and behold, the sporting guys had different ideas for game one, because if you're a basketball fan, even if you're just a casual observer, that game had everything. I mean, that game had everything. Close game, legend, iconic performance, shot making, had some defense. I thought both teams had periods where they played very good defense. And, of course, you had J.R. Smith. Now, a lot of talk, especially from the Cleveland side, and from Cleveland fans, Cleveland players, people inside their organization, a lot of chatter about the officiating. Here's what I'll say about the officiating. The Kevin Durant call, at the time I thought when I first saw it, I'm talking about the charge that got reversed into a block, turned into a block after the review about 36 seconds. I thought it was a charge initially. I thought it was a charge, and I thought it was much too close to turn back. With that being said, Cleveland still had the ball, and the game was still tied. Like, Durant's free throws did not come at the end of the game, where they came at the end of the game and it puts Golden State up by one or two. That was not the case. So Cleveland had the ball, tie game, Cleveland, after the George Hill, George Hill is allowed to make a free throw. Like, when you go to the line for two free throws, you're allowed to make both of them. So, if you're Cleveland, again, George Hill makes both free throws, they're about 1 point. With about 5 seconds left, 4.7 seconds left. Okay, even through a J.R. Smith debacle, the game was still tied going into overtime. Cleveland had ample opportunities to win this game. Ample opportunities. And, you know, again, I don't want to hear anything about officiating. We've seen, I mean, this is bad. It's the NBA. It's the finals, the playoffs. We've seen bad calls. We've seen bad calls in playoff games and finals games before. You got to play through that. You know, you hear Ty Lue, we got robbed. Again, if you're a Cleveland fan, you saw some good. I saw some good things. I thought Larry Nance played well. Kevin Love, 21-14. You know, I thought George Hill and Jeff Green both played, for the most part, played decent defense. And LeBron was, you know, simply LeBron. But this idea that the officiating was the main reason why Cleveland lost that game is just not. It's just not the case. I think the Durant call did not give Golden State a lead. The game was tied. They put two for, and who's to say that with 30 seconds left, 36 seconds left, Cleveland, you know, doesn't score in their possession, and Golden State comes back and scores and ties it up or hits a three. You know, I mean, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen in that situation. So I heard a lot of talk about the officiating. If you're Cleveland, again, you know, you got to be kicking yourself based on the fact that, again, George Hill missed a free throw that could have put the game, that could have put Cleveland up by one with 4.7 seconds left. Now, again, could Golden State come back and score 4.7 seconds? Of course. But they still would have had to score. Still would have had to score. J.R. Smith, you know, this is who J.R. Smith has been and always will be. If you're J.R. Smith, the worst thing that he could possibly do is go in that press conference and say that he actually knew that he knew the game was tied. Yeah, you can't, come on, man. You can't say that. That actually makes you look worse. To say I effed up, you know, I just own it. At that point, you're going to be a Twitter meme for the end of eternity. And I was thinking about some plays like in championship situations, right? In championship series, whether it's, you know, baseball, Super Bowl, whatever championship game you could think of, NCAA tournament. I was thinking about just what are the dumbest plays I've ever seen in my life. Or dumbest calls, coaching decisions. The Pete Carroll calling the pass play at the 1 yard line still is the worst to me in recent memory. That's still, even over Chris Webber with the timeout, even over this with J.R. Smith. That Pete Carroll call of, and he was the coach, so I don't want to hear about the offensive coordinator. That was Pete's the coach. He has to own that. And a recent article came out. And Cliff Abel, formerly of Seattle, basically said that Carroll has never got the team back since making that call back in the 2014 season. Like, he never got, like, the team. You notice the team has been on a steady decline ever since. So that is number one to me. But this J.R. Smith thing, I mean, dude, it's the NBA Finals. You don't know. You thought that you were ahead. You did not care to even look at the scoreboard while he's on the line. George Hill was on the free throw line. I mean, players don't. Generally, from what I've heard from NBA players, they don't. You know, unlike a fan who's watching the game either at the game or on the TV, players don't keep up with the score bucket by bucket. That's just not how it operates. You'll see a guy occasionally look up during timeouts, during huddles, they're keeping up the score. But for the most part, players are just playing, for the most part. But when you get in a situation where last 2 minutes, last minute, last 10, 30 seconds, you got to know what the damn score is. I mean, come on. But again, this is J.R. Smith. And that's how bad Jordan Clarkson has been. Because they really brought in Clarkson, some of these, and Rodney Hood and guys like that to kind of, like, you know, to kind of switch up become more athletic, but also to kind of like get got be able to take J.R. Smith off the floor at times when he was doing, you know, dumb shit like this. But that's how poorly those guys have played, that they still have to play for the most part J.R. Smith in, you know, in crunch time minutes. Again, before the series started, I picked Golden State in six. This could be the type of game that just Cleveland just can't recover from. I don't think it'll be a sweep because I just don't think Golden State is on the level that they were last season. They're not playing nowhere near as well as they played in last year's playoffs. It's not even close. So I think Cleveland will definitely get game three. And we'll see what happens with that. I think based on my logic, I think Cleveland would have to win game five and then Golden State wraps up in game six, which you think would be, you know, odds would be against it. But I just don't see I didn't see Golden State just wiping the floor of Cleveland in four or five games because I just don't like how Golden State is not the same team that they were last year. Now, they're still the best team. And I told you beforehand, throughout the course of the season, Golden State could be gotten the season, but there's nobody out there, frankly, that's going to be good enough to get them. They could have been beaten this season. They really could have. And, you know, Houston will be kicking itself for the remainder of the offseason, thinking that that should have been their series. But with that said, I think Cleveland would have beat Houston myself. But getting back to the game, you know, it's, you know, watching LeBron James, again, I'm just, you have to be blown away by just the stamina. This guy he just doesn't get tired for the most part. He does not get tired. We've seen him maybe game three of the Indiana series. That was the only time in the postseason that you've really seen him get tired. I want to say a little bit in the third quarter of game seven against Boston, maybe late third quarter. But for the most part, again, you've never seen a guy, no one, at his age, play at the level that he's playing at with this kind of stamina. I mean, that's this guy does not get tired. And I'm telling you right now, being on the floor with four future Hall of Famers in terms of what Golden State has, he made those guys look as though they're just not in the same, you know, stratosphere with him. And these are four future Hall of Famers. Steph Curry could go down as probably, I mean, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant will go down probably minimum 10 to 20 greatest players of all time. Minimum. I mean, Durant could be top 10, top 15. Curry could be top 15, top 20. Maybe even top. Curry could be top 15. So, you know, Klay Thompson, I mean, those guys, they have an all-star team. And for them to keep them in that game, control the pace, I thought Cleveland did an excellent job with controlling the pace. Golden State had a couple of runouts, but for the most part, the pace, listen, you hold Golden State to 107 points in regulation. It got away in overtime, and you knew it would, because Cleveland was mentally shot at that point. But you hold Golden State to 107 points. I think you've done your job in regulation. You hold them, like I said, to me the magic number is 110 and below holding Golden State. 110, 105 and below to holding Golden State. So I thought Cleveland defensively did fine there. Again, you got some performances out of, you got it. They got enough from their role players to win, as far as I'm concerned. They got enough in their role players to win. I mean, Love, Nance Jr., pounding them out on the offensive boards. But they wasted one there. That was a game that, again, that Golden State was ripe for the picking. Now, I think in game two, I could see a 15 to 20 point win for Golden State. I don't think that this series is going to get the series. I'm not thinking 2015 with this series. Like, I'm not thinking that we're going in that direction where Golden State is going to be now be shook by the fact that this series is close. by the fact that they is going to be shook by the fact that they had a close game one the way they were in 2015. Remember, 2015, they were far superior to Cleveland. Cleveland had a bunch of, you know, especially after the Kyrie injury in game one, with no Kevin Love and Dellavedova and guys like that. And you had a number of just cast-offs, Mozgov, you know, guys like that. You know, they played great defense, but I don't think that Golden State was their first time in the finals. This Golden State team is, you know, besides the fact that they have Kevin Durant, a little bit more seasoned, more poised than that team in 2015. So I don't think, you know, if LeBron can, you know, if you can't win a game with LeBron getting 51-8-8, that is, you know, it's not a good sign for the series moving forward. But again, hopefully the competitive nature of this series, you know, game one is a sign of things to come in terms of, you know, this series being competitive. Listen, if it's a sweep or a 5-game series where each game is close, I'll live with that. Because Cleveland is not supposed to be Golden State. Period. They are not. You know, and I don't think Cleveland's roster is a bad roster, but they're not supposed to be able to compete with Golden State at the way they compete with them in game one. But again, when you have that dude, and when that dude is playing at a level that, you know, just almost is defying description at this point, I mean, he does whatever he wants to do, and he's like a chess master out there. Like, he dictates the pace. He gets any shot that he wants. He's going out there physically manhandling those guys. And I really think that Golden State, this will be the first series, this will be when they really miss Andre Iguodala. And Iguodala sounds like he's going to be doubtful for game two. We might not see Iguodala for the rest of this series. I mean, that injury, the longer this keeps on lingering, you don't really want to bring him back in the middle of the finals and throw him into the frying pan with facing Mr. James here, especially the way James is playing. So I think game two might get away from Cleveland, and not so much mentally, but so many things had, like, everything that had to happen for them to win that game almost did happen. I mean, they pounded him on the offensive glass. LeBron James has the iconic game. Durant, and we'll get to Durant. Durant, you know, was off. Didn't shoot the ball well. 8 for 22. They know going to this series, and this was the biggest advantage that they had, was in the backcourt. That was something that Cleveland just has no answer for. Like, you're talking about, you know, if you're Klay Thompson and you're Steph Curry, you feel like you got let out of jail. You're talking about going from Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon to George Hill, J.R. Smith, and Jordan Clarkson. I mean, you cannot make up, like, that. That is as big of a drop off as you can go from one round to another. You can't find a bigger drop off in terms of level of play, or quality of players from in terms of the backcourts. That's going to be easy money for Golden State throughout the course of this series with that backcourt matchup. We'll see how Klay Thompson bounces back. Doesn't sound like the injury is serious, but we'll see how he bounces back in a couple of days from the little leg injury he had that took him out for a couple minutes. I think it was in the second quarter. So, you know, if you're Cleveland, all you have to do is try to go out there and get one. But chances are they probably missed their chance to win in Golden State with game one. A lot of times you see, you know, these, and you saw Curry talking about during the press conference, these game ones could be tricky coming off a series. That seems like that was the Cleveland's best chance to win at Golden State in these first two games. As far as Kevin Durant goes, I know he's been taking some heat in regards to, and I heard Jalen Rose, and I heard some other, you know, other guys, Jason Williams or Jay Williams, say that, you know, basically he wants, Stephen A. Smith said it, that Durant wanted no part of LeBron James. Like, and, you know, you can, on those switches, I mean, Durant was just, was running to the, he, and Durant was running, basically running to the guard, the next guy when he was switched off of LeBron James. I mean, it was no doubting it. Durant was not up for trying to guard LeBron James. Like those picks, some of those screens that were being set, or many of those screens were not like Kevin Garnett, Andrew Bogut screens. They were not hitting them with these powerful screens that just clear, that just force you to switch. Durant was not fighting over the screens for the most part at all. And I'm kind of baffled by it because last year in the finals, Durant really, for the first time in his career, because I've always felt like throughout the course of their careers, and we know James is a better player, but Durant is ultra talented. Though that's not, like, in terms of talent, I'm not going to say LeBron James is light years beyond Kevin Durant, because he's not. The separation from LeBron to Durant is mental at this point in their career. He is mentally, he's smart. LeBron is smart and, you know, smartest player in the league, one of the smartest players ever, but he mentally is stronger and superior to Durant. That's where the separation is at this point in their careers. I don't think, in terms of skill wise, I think they're pretty, I mean, I think they're pretty close. I think LeBron's a better superior passer. I think Durant's a superior shooter. And defensively, I think Durant's even better defensively at this stage in their careers. But the idea that 2016 finals where LeBron averages a triple-double, 2017 finals where LeBron averages a triple-double, it's Durant's first finals since 2012, all the pressure's on him, and he went tit-for-tat, went toe-to-toe, and I felt like outplayed LeBron in that series last year. Had the biggest moment, the biggest moment in that series last year was Game 3, fourth quarter of game three, Durant hits the three in LeBron's eye, and that was, you know, that was all she wrote. That was it. Series over. So I don't understand the drop off. I know Durant missed some time early in the season, but he really hasn't played well throughout the course of these playoffs, especially in Houston after the first two games in Houston. No, he had a big game seven. Had a big game seven again in Houston. He played well, especially in the second half. But for the most part, it's been a shaky postseason for Durant. For the most part, now, especially in the Houston series. I mean, again, I thought that Durant was past that with LeBron, with being paying too much respect to LeBron James. I really thought he was past that, considering how he played last year, especially with the comments that he's making during the summertime. With, you know, somebody asked him if he thought that LeBron James was a better player than him, he basically said no. But apparently those demons, LeBron demons, have resurfaced. And, you know, you should kind of should have saw this coming a little bit with some of the comments that Durant made about the level that LeBron was playing on. Again, stuff that, again, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, those guys would never compliment a player like that, especially if they were headed towards possibly playing. It just would not happen. You know, there's paying homage, and then there's just, you know, kissing ass. And he basically was kissing LeBron James's ass with talking about how ridiculous he was playing, the level he's playing. I could say that as a fan. You could say that as a fan. But as another player, you're competing against this guy. You can't say that as another player. And again, he early in his career, Kevin Durant would work out with LeBron James, which I didn't agree with. So it'll be, you know, spotlight is going to be on Durant moving forward. He kind of got took it off the hook with the J.R. Smith stuff, the wild finish, the George Hill missed free throws, the Tristan Thompson nonsense with Draymond Green. So a lot of stuff that kind of took Durant off the hook a bit. Or, you know, if Cleveland wins that game, and let's say that, you know, Cleveland wins that game, Durant would be getting torched for his performance. He really would be, because Klay Thompson played well. Draymond Green was all over the place with the rebounds, defense, and block, you know, energy. you know, Curry was great. I thought Curry was the second best player on the floor. A distant second, I might add, to LeBron. But Curry played well, extremely well. And even Klay Thompson, after you got, you know, came back in the game, shot the ball relatively well. So, again, Golden State, this is not a fair fight. It really is not a fair fight. And again, I was impressed with Cleveland, them being able to you know, put themselves in a position to win the game. It'll be interesting to see game two, whether or not Cleveland can survive LeBron coming down even like 5%. Like, think about it, if LeBron would have had 40 in that game, well, first of all, it wouldn't have went to overtime, but, you know, just 11 less points, they lose by, you know, 12 or 13 points. Or they lose by 10 or 11 in regulation. Like, he took 51 points out of LeBron James, 51-8-8, just to get him to overtime. So that just tells you the gap between these two teams. We'll see what happens in game two. I have a feeling that, again, that Golden State is going to run away in terms of that game. As far as, you know, we had, you know, talking about battles, and this is the thing I love about hip hop, and especially in terms of rap. You get a rapper like Pusha T coming at Drake. Drake is a superstar, global superstar in terms of hip hop and rap. One of the, you know, however you want to rank it, three best. I mean, you can make a case that Drake is the second best rapper in the game right now. Like, let's put Jay-Z and Nas. Let's put that group aside for now. I'm just saying in terms of, like, in the Kendrick's on his, Kendrick is LeBron James right now. You can make a case that Drake is Kevin Durant. Like, you can really make that case right now. So imagine, this wouldn't even happen in the NBA. Imagine if, who would be a player comparable to Pusha T? I'm not even going to say an all-star. Like, imagine a role player, a glorified role player coming at Kevin Durant saying, "Man, I can beat you one-on-one. Let's play one-on-one." Shit probably wouldn't happen because that player probably would be destroyed by Kevin Durant. But this is the thing. This is what you got to love about hip-hop. Pusha T could live to be 1,000 and not have a career that equals out to what Drake has done. It's not even a discussion in terms of whose career you would take. But when it comes to battling, when it comes to, you know, forget, it doesn't matter. It's when it comes to just, hey, I'm coming at you. The cars, the money, the mansions, all that stuff, the platinum records, the millions of record sales, Billboard charts, none of that shit matters when it comes to battle rapping. It doesn't matter. If I could spit, and if I've done enough research, which clearly Pusha T has, you're fair game. You are absolutely your fair game, and that's what you have to love. This battle is the essence of hip hop. It's not Nas. Nas Jay-Z was like, you know, Celtics Lakers. That was, you know, Chamberlain Russell going at that's a rap. We will never see another rap battle of that ilk, of that magnitude, and that ever. Yeah, and both of them produce classic, not only classic songs take over in ether, but classic albums. So we're not going to get that from this. And I still would put, you know, some of the battles that I've seen, that I've been able to witness in my lifetime. I still love the Canvas LL Cool J, because the career got ended with that one. Like, Canvas's career was ended by LL Cool J. So Nas, Jay-Z, Canvas, those are the ones that stand out. That, again, that Nas, Jay-Z was just, you know, that was just on some other, some that was on a level that will never be even approached. But, you know, you gotta give Pusha T credit. I mean, first of all, the battle was over after the story of Adonis. At that point, if you're Drake, if you're not if you're not coming out with a guaranteed, like, end your career track, then you just quit, just stop. Because after the story of Adonis, it was no game was over after that. It was over after that song. So, you know, Pusha T, the fact that we're talking about Pusha T, like a month ago, we weren't talking about, nobody was thinking about Pusha T a month ago, for the most part. Comes out with the album produced by Kanye, 7 songs. That was on fire. Now he's, you know, he's winning this rap, this battle against a guy, against a, you know, a rap superstar in Drake, and a global superstar in Drake. And, you know, again, this is what you gotta love about hip hop. You can't, in no other, not in another sport, not in another walk of life, could you get this. Like, you couldn't have the manager of Wendy's coming at Warren Buffett. You know what I'm saying? Just like, it just wouldn't work out. It's just not, you know, realistic. So again, at this point, I think Drake just take that L, man. You know, you came back with a couple of decent tracks, but sometimes you gotta know when to hold them, when to fold them. You gotta learn how to take them L, take that L. It's not gonna end your career. Now again, push it to you. Again, that's another thing. Drake's career is fine. Like Drake's, whatever next album Drake comes out with, Drake is all over the Billboard charts. He's good. So this was not a career ender for Drake from that standpoint. Like Jay-Z tried to end Nas's career. Nas had to come back with a single and a classic album, or his career would have been over. Like that's how hard Jay-Z hit with the Takeover. But this was not a career. This is not a career, you know, ender for Drake. This is just, you know, a dude just catching a hot streak. I mean, Drake, Pusha T is going to be a summer. It's going to be Pusha T's time right now. Again, that's the thing about rap. That's the thing about acting. And when it's your time, you know, you see actors who have a good 2 to 3 movie stint, 4 to 5 year stint, and then they fade away, and you're like, what happened to them? You know, everybody's not LeBron, man. Everybody's not going to be consistently great over 10 to 15 years in any walk, especially in any form of entertainment. You know, everybody, you have one hit wonders. Rather be a one hit wonder than a no hit wonder. I'll take being a one hit wonder, because a lot of no hit wonders out there that you never heard of who are trying to get that one hit. So right now it's Pusha T's time. You know, if you're Drake, you know, you take the L, come out with your album, you know, it'll sell 5-10 million, it'll sell 5-6 million copies, and you'll have hits on the Billboard charts, because this is not gonna stop Drake from making good music, you know. I'll still be listening to Nice for What and God's Plan. But, you know, you gotta take that L, man. You gotta take that L. Speaking of L's, that's a perfect segue to Brian Colangelo, who should be, and I don't know how he still has a job, by the way, should be the former general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll see what happens over the course of the weekend. But, you know, when you look at this story about, and if it's true, if Brian Colangelo is behind these dummy Twitter accounts, it is one of the worst cases of insecurity that I've ever seen in my life, in anything that I've ever seen. And if you know, it will actually make Sam Hinkie, you know, I think it will take Sam Hinkie's place in the lore of Philadelphia Sixer history to a whole nother level. It really would. It really will. Because you are the general manager of a team that has, outside of the Boston Celtics, maybe the brightest future in basketball, in the NBA. You have two players under the age of 22 who will be two of the top, who in a couple of years will be two of the top 5 players in the league. Maybe next year, both of them will be top 10. have a chance to get Kawhi Leonard, maybe an outside chance. I don't think it's happening to get LeBron James, Paul George, possibly somebody big is coming to Philadelphia next year. That's going to happen. They're going to make a move, pull the trigger on making a move. And I think that, listen, the Philadelphia fans were, you know, embarrassed. But if you're Philadelphia fans, you're good. Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Villanova is NCAA champions. You have Joel Embiid. You have Ben Simmons. You're good. This will pass over. But if you're Brian Colangelo, you are basketball. Your name is basketball royalty. You are a Colangelo. And again, if listen, where there's smoke, there's normally fire. I cannot see this not being true. Like, I can't. Now you have to talk about his wife being behind it, and that even makes it even worse. If your wife is behind it, that actually makes it worse. To be honest with you, you might as well be like J.R. Smith and just take the. Don't even allow somebody to you know, shit on your wife's name. Just be like, nope, I did it. I'm not. You can't leave your wife hanging out to dry. Like, as soon as that article comes out, that article came out USA Today today about, excuse me, Friday, about it possibly being his wife possibly being involved. I'm Brian Colangelo. I'm jumping in front of that right now. Like, no, sir. Leave my wife out of it. But again, if you're the Sixers, you can't keep this guy on. At this point, it becomes a trust factor. Players, you know, within that organization, you're a player on that team. You can't trust Brian Colangelo. Other GMs who tried, you know, trying to cut deals with him, trusting his word on, like, you can't deal with him. You have no credibility at this point. So. Again, I expect the Sixers to cut loose with him. I think that this raises the status of Sam Hinkie. Because for another man to be as insecure about himself, his position, his, you know, his standing within the organization, his standing in the league, and to have the name Colangelo is remarkable to me. I would never think that this could happen with a front office person. Like, this is something that, you know, kids have, you know, teenagers have dummy accounts and Twitter accounts. Well, Kevin Durant did have multiple accounts. So let's not forget about that one. But this is on some a different. Like I said, this is a different level of insecurity. If this is indeed true, and there's nothing. Everything that I've read, there's no reason for me not to believe that this did not happen. He's not responsible for this in some way, shape, or form. Or that he didn't have people supposed to coming out with these tweets. Like, he knows what, like, Brian Colangelo knows when he did it or knows who did it. Or has somebody do it for him. So the Sixers absolutely need to cut loose with him. Again, you're a Sixers fan. You have Joel Embiid, you have Ben Simmons. You're in good shape. You'll be fine. Going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time as we look ahead or look back at game 2 of the finals, and also the Caps looking to take control of this series against the Vegas Golden Knights. Caps looking to take a 2-1 lead, game 3 Saturday night in the district. DC is going to be insane. I mean, think about the fact that another week or so, or however long this is, a week and a half, that D.C., the District of Columbia, can have a parade for a championship team in one of four major sports. I mean, that's on the table right now. 3 wins away. The Capitals are 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup. Have a great weekend. I'm out.